Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your episode for Monday, February 12th, and this is Matt Shook, your host. The honeymoon is over for the Blake Griffin era, and you can find me, your host, Matt Shook, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. And then another underscore after that. You can also find the Locked On Pistons Twitter feed at Locked On Pistons as well. And check out our Facebook page too at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. But today on the podcast, we'll be recapping the weekend games, a couple of losses for the Pistons who came into the weekend on a high note and left on the lowest note as well. And then we'll be asking the three biggest questions that Stan Van Gundy and you listeners and me, the host, need to answer right now about this team as we go forward, looking ahead to the post-All-Star break with a couple of games before that. And speaking of those, we'll be looking ahead to the Monday night. That's right, the Pistons are back in action tonight at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, who are without Boogie Cousins, who was lost for the season with an injury a couple weeks back. But Friday night, we'll start there. The Pistons lost 108-95 to the Los Angeles Clippers, an emotional night, a chippy atmosphere at Little Caesars Arena on ESPN. Blake Griffin had 19 points for the Pistons, but he, as well as the Pistons, floundered down the stretch, getting outscored 31-15 in the fourth quarter, the game's deciding time, as the Pistons had the lead going into the fourth and lost it to Doc Rivers and the Clippers. Reggie Bullock had 19 points, but he only had 3 points in the entire second half. Andre Drummond had 12 points and 17 rebounds, which sounds okay, but he was pretty much awful throughout the game. They went to him in the post quite a bit. Seems to be kind of a reoccurring theme sometime when he goes up against another highlight film or another all-star-ish type player like they did against DeAndre Jordan on Friday night, that he tries to go inside and tries to beat those guys one-on-one, and obviously that's not his game. And he came up short on a lot of hooks, just missed everything on his post-up situations, which if you've been watching the Pistons for the past several years, you know that's not Andre Drummond's game, and I don't know why Stan Van Gundy and Andre Drummond, whoever else is involved in those decisions, is thinking that's a good idea to try those things again. But anyways, Tobias Harris, 12 points against his former team for the Clippers. Avery Bradley had 10 points. Austin Rivers, in his first game back after missing several with an injury, had 16 points, which is frustrating. Pistons, he was just getting by his man in the backcourt, an issue that I'll talk about for the Pistons guards a little bit later. But all in all, a not-so-bad loss against a probable Western Conference playoff team, or possible Western Conference playoff team, I should say. And you would think that the Pistons would regroup and take care of business, take care of the trash on Sunday. But that's when the Pistons lost and played like trash themselves with a 118-115 defeat in Atlanta against the Hawks, one of the worst teams in the league. We'll add this one to the list of the bad losses that the Pistons have had this year. And I think that those bad losses have possibly gotten longer of a list than the good wins at this point. 54 fouls combined by the teams, the most in any Pistons game this season when combining the two teams, and it looked like it too. I mean, this was one of those days where, obviously doing the podcast, I'm watching every Pistons game this year, something that I don't normally do, especially during this last decade. You know, I'm like many of you fans, or many of maybe the second-tier fans who are out there who catch a game a week or something like that. But like I said, since I've been doing this every day here on Locked On Pistons, obviously I'm watching and sometimes rewatching the snippets of the game as well. But this was just one of those days on Sunday afternoon where I definitely did not enjoy following this team closely. It was not an enjoyable game to watch, especially when you had the tough loss on Friday, but you know, I didn't feel all that bad about it against a good team, had a 5-game winning streak going into it. And then just to lay an egg against one of the worst teams in the league that had really no motivation of winning and nothing, you know, Torian Prince had a bad game and just not a lot of talent when you see, and for them to score 118 points on you was just a ridiculous display. Like, I feel like I was kind of robbed of 2.5 hours of my life that I'll not get back. And I'm sure many of you who watched that one probably feel that way as well. Blake Griffin, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Sounds like a decent stat line, but he was awful throughout the game. He was 3 for 10 from three-point land, but two of those three-pointers were in the final minute, including a bank three at the buzzer, which I was like irrationally offended by that shot for some reason. The fact that, I mean, obviously he should have shot it, and there's no reason not to, but the fact that he just banked that one in after bricking the most wide-open jump shots throughout the game was a frustrating thing to see. He's obviously someone who's added that element to this game this year in a smart way because he needs to, and we will see how that as it goes on. We're getting our first real close and real extensive looks at him in a Pistons uniform, and many of us who follow the Pistons, you know, caught him on games occasionally, watched the playoff games and all that, but it's going to be a long 5 years if that's what's going to be, is him missing those shots. I'm not saying he shouldn't take as many as he did on Sunday afternoon, but certainly when they're open, he's going to have to take them and he's going to have to knock them down. And the percentages bear out that he's a better shooter than he was on Sunday afternoon. And he was obviously fighting with himself a little bit. He was so wide open in that game, and obviously a game plan decision by Mike Budenholzer and the Hawks to leave him out there to some extent. And then at some point it got into his head and he started missing badly on some wide, wide open jump shots. Really a frustrating performance to watch as a newly minted Pistons / Blake Griffin fan that we all are, kind of adjusting to this new team. Reggie Bullock, if you're catching a pattern here, had 20 points, but only two of them were in the second half. Ish Smith, we'll get to Ish Smith a little bit later on in the podcast. But Andre Drummond, 25 points and 15 rebounds. But I wouldn't really even say that he had that strong of a game, which I guess to some extent is to his credit that he can put up those kind of numbers in a game that he didn't really jump off the page, didn't really dominate that much. And maybe this is just my overall feeling of the loss, but you can maybe kind of get the impression that I hated pretty much everything about this game. But I feel like Andre, to his credit, got beat up around the hoop quite a bit, dusted himself off and made a bunch of free throws. I believe he's about 9 of 13 from the line. James Ennis III, the newly acquired trade deadline piece that the Pistons got from Memphis, he had 14 points and 4 rebounds. I didn't hate him on Sunday. I liked him, actually. He was pretty good. Jameer Nelson got some runs, 6 points in 19 minutes. He was actually inserted back into the game for the final 2 minutes, which was alarming. I think that had more to do with Ish Smith than anything good that Jameer Nelson was doing. And I also felt like that was strangely a good idea, which tells you about where this point guard position is at this point right now. But Jameer, he looks possibly washed up. Obviously, he's 36 years old, and he's played one game with the Pistons, so we're not going to make any conclusions about that. But wasn't encouraging in some parts, but then the fact that he didn't really look that good, but you felt better with him than Ish in at all at any point of the game was alarming, so to speak. So I think I've mentioned this before, and maybe some of you listeners might think I'm making too big of a deal about something like this, but I think that Sunday afternoon start was a factor. You watch these games, I think these are guys that have kind of a clock of when they need to be up, and that's 7 o'clock Eastern on most nights. So when you play a 3:30 afternoon game, especially in a place like Atlanta, and not here to rip on the Hawks, but Atlanta's got a pretty empty arena, pretty dead place, and the Pistons can add themselves to that list too. So not, like I said, not necessarily ripping on the Hawks and their fans, who are obviously going through a rebuild process that will take some time and some pain. But I think when you add those kind of factors together, coming off of the Friday emotional loss, now you should say that they've got a short road here before the All-Star break, which is this weekend. So it shouldn't have been a factor, but for them to come out flat, I'm kind of grasping at straws to why that was. And I think that afternoon start could have been a little bit of a factor too. I'm not saying that they were out in Atlanta all night. I'm not saying that there weren't, but you know, who knows? And I'm not doubting the professionalism of the players or something like that, but just you're looking for reasons why they would go out and lay an egg like they would, knowing that the finish line of the All-Star break is really close, and this is a game that you needed to win when you're in the middle of a playoff hunt trying to climb back into the playoff race. And so, I don't know, maybe a certain energy the crowd was missing, but this seemed to lack effort and energy, which is something that I know as fans we kind of crutch on sometimes when our team plays poorly, that we say, oh, they weren't giving enough effort and energy, but it really did seem like something was missing from this team, and I think particularly weren't able to get out and run in transition. Not that the Pistons are the most transition-heavy team, but when you basically had no transition effort whatsoever, that's going to contribute to looking flat. I think in that run that they had in the fourth quarter with James Ennis III leading the way, Jameer Nelson, to his credit, made some plays as well, when I think those two combined for maybe 11 straight points or something like that, and they went up by about 6 or 7. That was when they were running up and down. And those are the new guys. So a little bit strange that the guys who are trying to acclimate themselves to this team and don't really know what to do, those are the ones that were throwing it out there and doing the best they could to get this team going, kind of like Reggie Bullock did in the end of the first half as well. But anyway, Dwayne Dedman, who should have been traded at the deadline, I think some team should have picked him up, damn it. It didn't work out well for the Pistons on Sunday, but he had a career high, 20 points and 13 rebounds. I've always kind of liked Dedman. When the Spurs picked him up, I thought that was a nice pickup. I know he didn't work out very well for them, but a decent young player that the Hawks have in Dwayne Dedman there. A guy who I don't think is that decent, and he had a really good start to the season and abused Ish Smith throughout the game and Jameer Nelson too, so give him credit for that. But Dennis Schroeder, 23 points and 7 assists, just kind of a placeholder point guard for a team that hopefully has bigger and better things ahead for their backcourt situation. But he looked very good on Sunday, give him credit for that, knocked down big free throws at the end of the game as well. But I think Stan Van Gundy said it best afterwards, quote, "Our defense stinks," he said. Quote, "We just got broken down, broken down, broken down." And I can't say much else better than that, just to get, you know, clowned by the Hawks in a game that you needed to win and they needed to lose is a pretty embarrassing situation. But we'll talk about the big three questions that Pistons fans are thinking about as we head into this week. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men in that coveted age bracket of 18 to 44 who are into Detroit products and Detroit companies, then this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Going to be talking a little bit later about the New Orleans Pelicans, who are in town tonight at Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit to take on the Pistons for a 7 o'clock game. But we're going to talk about now the three biggest questions that the Pistons will have to figure out now and going forward in the future as well. Number one, what the hell is going on at point guard? Ish Smith looks completely lost right now. He had 2 points and 5 turnovers on Sunday despite getting big minutes. He seemed like he had more turnovers than that. Just awful passes in the half court that weren't even close to on the mark. And just really, for the fact that they had to bring in Jameer Nelson, who had just met his teammates on Friday night, or met some of his teammates on Friday night, and couldn't have known much of the offense or much of what Stan Van Gundy was trying to do offensively, and certainly isn't a defensive stopper or anything like that, where his the defensive prowess is so good that at least he could, contribute on that side without much thought. But, you know, it tells you what Stan Van Gundy thinks about Ish Smith. And obviously Langston Galloway, I believe he got the DNP. Yeah, he got the DNP on Sunday. It's something that a lot of the fans on Twitter, and I kind of agree with them on this, about how frustrating it's been to see the swings in his play. It seems like he gets a few minutes for a few games in a row, and he has such a short leash when he goes out. If he goes out and has a bad game or two, he'll get some DNPs after that. He'll fall out of the rotation for a while. He obviously isn't a natural point guard. He was filling in as the backup before Jameer came along, and did play, even with Reggie Jackson, a little bit at point guard this year and looked good at times, but his ball handling isn't great. He is more of a standstill shooter as far as offensively, as far as being his biggest strengths offensively. But again, another guy out there that can do some things. He can obviously get the ball up the court. I mean, we're talking about NBA guys who are guards, so all these guys can get the ball up the court. But, you know, as we go on, if Langston Galloway, for whatever reason, isn't getting the job done enough for Stan Van Gundy, and I happen to believe that there's some things going on that he's not doing well enough for Stan Van Gundy, just when you have a guy like Stan who get guys in and out of the rotation, sometimes you go in and out of the doghouse, that as an outsider, as a fan, or even a reporter, or myself doing a podcast, like, it's hard to get inside the team and know what exactly is going on with Stan Van Gundy and Langston Galloway. I'm not saying that there's a discipline issue, but just that maybe there's some things that he's not doing offensively to execute the game plan. Maybe there's some things he's not doing defensively to nullify maybe his shortcomings as a playmaker offensively. So that brings on the question of our point guard situation. What is going on? Maybe do they need to get creative and put Luke Kennard out there in a ball handling role more at some point? Or is Stanley Johnson going to be that type of guy? Obviously, Stanley's been bringing up the ball up the court. He's obviously got the athleticism to play on the offensive end, point guard wise, but does he have the playmaking ability? He's a pretty good passer, but ultimately there's a difference between being a good, you know, slasher and passer or court vision and being a complete point guard. So, and there's a lot of teams out there that don't go traditional point guard. Sometimes we're not one of those teams at this point. Maybe that's something that Stan Van Gundy needs to explore going forward. But it's funny to think about that they got six guys on the roster that they consider to possibly be point guards. And with Reggie Jackson out right now, none of them are apparently good enough to, you know, win games against the Atlanta Hawks as the point guard of the team. But I think it's even a bigger question going forward with this team is the backcourt defense. You know, the front court, Andre Drummond's got the defensive numbers going on right now, and those are strange at best because he's clearly not a defensive player of the year candidate, but the defensive statistics, the advanced stats seem to suggest he is. I think that's kind of something that's been going on with him for a few years for whatever reason. A pretty good defender, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Blake Griffin's not, you know, an outstanding defender or anything like that. Reggie Bullock and Stanley Johnson getting the bulk of maybe the minutes on the side. Hopefully James Ennis will fall into that form as well as a pretty good wing defender. Certainly not outstanding by any means either. But if you're going to have some, you know, not outstanding players defensively across the court, you need your point guard to be better defensively. Ish Smith's awful. Reggie Jackson, even when he's been healthy, has been not very good either. And with the latest injury for his ankle, he showed last time when he came back pretty much all of last season, he struggled and wasn't quite healthy. So to anticipate that Reggie's going to come back and be full form defensively, even, and like I said, even for him, that's not even that good. It's troubling to think about, especially when, you know, this is a franchise that was built on Chauncey Billups and Isaiah Thomas, to say nothing of Joe Dumars. I mean, backcourt defense has kind of been the hallmark of the Detroit Pistons. And when you're a team that's maybe a little bit less talented than some of the other teams out there, you got to make up for it in some ways. And with it being a perimeter league, and I vouch for the fact that Blake Griffin might be the type of player that you might want to build the franchise around, if only because he's the only star you could get your hands on at this point. And if it's a perimeter league, I don't think that you need to get that, you know, 10th or 12th best available perimeter player. It might be smarter to kind of go the other way and get those big players like Blake Griffin into the fold. But since it is a perimeter league, you don't need Kyrie Irving, but you do need a tough ball handler to kind of take the reins of this team and lead them from a defensive place as it is. So I just, and I know that Reggie Jackson's kind of the leader of this team, and he is that way, but if he's going to be out there and he's going to be the main guy with this team, as he will be for the next couple of years, maybe the backup or maybe the guys that you bring in need to have that tough-minded defensive ability kind of etched in there. And I think that's maybe one of the shortcomings that Stan Van Gundy has had as an executive is not identified tough defensive players. Now, of course, if you're a Pistons fan, Donovan Mitchell is the name that stands out to you. And we didn't even expect him to be nearly the offensive player that he is as a rookie, but at least his defensive ability was his bona fides and was pretty much the main part of his resume going into the draft last year. So I don't know if Reggie's going to ever be that guy with his injuries. But like I said, he can't even play defense at a high level even when he is healthy. And with his contract, I don't know that there's much you can do about it at this point. You got Reggie for two more years after this season on his deal. You got Ish Smith for another year at $6 million next year, the third of his 3 years on the contract. What's the plan going forward for this backcourt? How do you get them to be a little bit tougher? And obviously that's something that maybe they could have addressed with the first round pick this year that's now in LA. So some troubling signs. I mean, I just don't know how they handle the fact that Dennis Schroeder is going out there and getting 23 on them. And I don't think he's one of the top, you know, in the two thirds of the top point guards and the starting point guards in the league, and he's out there roasting him. I don't know what to expect from Jrue Holiday tonight. I don't know what to expect from Kyrie Irving after that. I don't know what to expect from Schroeder again on Wednesday. It might just get to be a difficult situation for the defense in the backcourt. Second of all, for the questions, where was Reggie Bullock in the second half, and what do the Pistons need to do to best utilize him as a player? You saw in the last 90 seconds of the first half against Atlanta on Sunday, he took that team that slogged through the first half and took them into the halftime locker room with a one-point lead by scoring, I believe it was about 7 or 8, 9 points in a row, being aggressive and getting the ball, being decisive when he got the ball and getting shots up big. It felt big, like a big moment that maybe escaped something and would cruise a little bit in the second half, someone who kind of came forward and wanted it. And then in the second half, he didn't come forward again and didn't really make his presence known. I think you could blame, like many of you fans are, you can blame Stan Van Gundy for a lot of that. They're not running plays for him. But I don't think he's coming and getting the ball and confidently making plays and asserting himself like someone who at this point needs to do and at this point deserves to do as well. You know, that's not what we're seeing from him after halftime. So I think some of it falls on the coaching staff, and some of the blame has to go on to Reggie himself as well. He's risen the expectations for himself, for better or worse, and because of the bad backcourt on this team, the Pistons kind of need him to be that guy. He's the best player on the perimeter for the Pistons right now, and that's crazy to think about, that Reggie Bullock, who's basically a minimum contract guy, you know, kind of a cast-off, kind of a journeyman, so to speak, so far throughout his career, and of course injuries have played a part in that, but he's got to step up if he's going to be the best player in the backcourt, and we're going to have to see more from him going forward, which is hard to believe because he's scoring 20 and 19 in a couple of the weekend games, but he's almost giving you a taste of what he's got when he's going and getting the ball at the top of the key and dribbling and making a nice confident pull-up shot from 15. And then the defense is squaring in on the last play. He slips down, gets a nice pass, and ends up with a layup kind of at the buzzer there. So we're getting some taste, but we need to maybe see a little bit more from him. And it's strange to complain about Bullock, but you know, if he's going to be the guy, he's got to kind of be the guy like we've seen Reggie Jackson. I mean, to his credit, Reggie's been able to step up and try to be the guy. It hasn't worked all the time, but maybe we need some more of that from this backcourt at this point. And then thirdly, what's the offensive identity of this team? Are we going to be going watching Blake Griffin throw up wide open jump shots for the next 5 years? God help me if that's what we're going to see, because, you know, you're going to get a new Locked On Pistons host pretty soon if that's the case. The Pistons were at their best earlier this season when they had Andre Drummond at the high post. And will Andre ever get back to that point, or has that been figured out? Do we not need to be – I mean, they're still running some of that, and he's at the elbow a little bit, and Bullock's making some cuts, and they tried to get that going early in the game on Sunday. But the Pistons were at their best, you know, at that time earlier this year. So if Blake's going to be up there and being kind of the high post guy, then how does Drummond fit in? You don't want Drummond posting up, and, you know, maybe Blake goes down to the low post, and Andre stays high, and Blake kind of runs back and forth on the baseline and kind of weaves his way into a little bit. Now, obviously, I know that Stan Van Gundy wants Blake Griffin to not fit into the Pistons offense, but become his own player and be the star that he is. But I think he's showing that isolation type plays for him haven't really worked so far. His shooting percentages are way down since joining the Pistons, and even wide open spot up threes aren't necessarily working for him either. So there needs to be some more creativity on how to get Blake Griffin involved offensively and how to get the Pistons cohesively to work together as a unit and see what happens. These are some big questions for Stan Van Gundy to deal with. He's going to have to deal with them in a short span. Of course, the two light opponents that the Pistons had before the All-Star break and then a week off to maybe sit down and figure out some of these things should help. But certainly time for Stan Van Gundy, the coach, to prove his worth, as the work for the executive part of the season is pretty much all done. He's constructed a roster that should be able to get to the Eastern Conference playoffs and possibly even make some noise. Now he's got to get it done as a coach and get these guys to play together and then come together as a team as well. But we're going to take a look to tonight's opponents, the New Orleans Pelicans, in a little bit after this. But you should also be listening to the Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio. Got the new coach, and you should be checking that out every day as well as the other NBA and NFL podcasts, one per team in each of those leagues. The Locked On Network, your team every day. Well, the Pistons are now 27-28, two games behind the Philadelphia 76ers for the final spot in the Eastern Conference playoff spot. Two games left before the All-Star break tonight at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, and then on Wednesday at home against the Atlanta Hawks, seeking some revenge from that crap game that they played on Sunday down in the dirty South. I fully expect the Pistons to lay the smack down on that one, basically, as the All-Star break episodes of Locked On Pistons could have a slightly different tone from their host, I promise you, if we have to sit through another loss to the Atlanta Hawks. But like I said, tonight, 7 o'clock, the Pistons are 3-point favorites, believe it or not, at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, who have lost 5 of 7 games since losing Boogie Cousins for the seasons with an Achilles injury. The Pelicans got 44 points and 17 rebounds on Saturday, from Anthony Thomas, their superstar player who's going to be starting in the All-Star game. My God, I mean, just an outstanding talent and going to be an issue for the Pistons to deal with, as he is for every team that they go up against. That Saturday game against Brooklyn on the road in overtime, a win for the Pelicans there. Nikola Mirotic, who the Pelicans got a couple days before the trade deadline from the Bulls, he stepped in for Cousins and kind of taken those minutes, obviously not as effectively, and a much different player than Cousins is, but kind of stepped into that role as the second big man with that unit as well. Coincidentally, he was actually traded for Jameer Nelson, and so Nelson was part of that deal to the Bulls, and Nelson was then dealt to the Pistons from Chicago, although he never played for the Bulls there. So right now, the Pelicans are basically going five deep. They got Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore, who's having a great season. And then Rajon Rondo is kind of the point guard who's still sticking around here in the league, too. And then you got Mirotić and Anthony Davis up front. Those five guys played 42 minutes or more apiece in the overtime win on Saturday. So the back-to-back for the Pistons shouldn't be as much of an impact as maybe usual against a team that doesn't have as much depth as many teams in the NBA, especially right now with their injuries. Plus, watching that game on Sunday, I don't think there were any Pistons that really wore themselves out against Atlanta. Although, of course, the trip is tough, and these are guys that are professionals that are going through, you know, some tough travel and playing on a Sunday afternoon game and then coming back home Monday night is certainly less than ideal, but it's what every NBA team goes through throughout the season. And, of course, with the urgency of the loss to Atlanta, I would hope that there's a little bit of a gut check with this team right now going forward. But we will be recapping this game for Tuesday's podcast. So enjoy the game, everyone, and hope Anthony Davis doesn't ruin your Monday night. And I'll be chasing some guests for the upcoming All-Star break this week as well. If you got any ideas, send them along to me as well. If there's a guest that you'd like us to reach out to and try to get on the podcast, let us know. But you should also be following Locked On NBA Network on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. And give us a like on our Facebook page at Locked On Pistons Matt Shook. And give us a iTunes rating if you'd like, and also give us a subscribe on iTunes as well. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you all again soon.